Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to the Need to Know podcast. This is episode 213. My name is Robert Crane, and I am broadcasting from an undisclosed location and flying solo. Being a traveler, having to go to different locations to do things like training and enablement means that, again, sometimes Brenton and myself are unable to exactly coordinate our schedules to record together. So I thought it was easier, quicker, and simpler if I just came and, again, added a bit of news onto the front of this and got out our episode and our interview, because there's a lot of benefit, I think, in doing that. So that's explanation, and let me just churn through a few news for you, get you up to date, and then we get straight into our interview. Now, one of the things that has happened recently is Microsoft and Samsung have come together to basically partner around Samsung's latest device here. So their Galaxy Note 10 phone has come out, and a lot of the applications here are going to be based on Microsoft rather than in Google. So we can see that perhaps what Samsung's looking to do is to remove its independence, or to prove its independence from Google. And even though it's running Android on its operating system there, is to look at putting the Microsoft experiences in there, and again link up with Microsoft as a provider and not as a threat, maybe around the operating system and around the phone. So we'll see how that goes. We'll put links to the information about that in the show notes. But again, if you're in the market for a new phone and you want to have it all connected up to the Microsoft environment, again, don't go past a Samsung device here that will give you that sort of connectivity. Now, again, another one of the updates we've seen come to SharePoint is we have some more improvements around how we do updates to pages, what's available to us in this environment, especially around the authoring and the news. So we've got some abilities for undo, redo, we've got some drag and drop files to a canvas, and we have some new vertical sections there, recommendations and so on. So we'll put the link again in the show notes. So if you are interested in branding your SharePoint page, getting more out of it, have a look at the new features here that are become available for SharePoint to give you that flexibility there, and again a better experience when it comes to creating an intranet style look and feel, branded, highly branded tenant. I think Microsoft and SharePoint does that really, really well these days, and not much need these days for customizations. Now let's go in and talk about some of the advantages of OneDrive. We've been talking about OneDrive. I use OneDrive on a regular basis as I travel. One of the examples is I take pictures directly with the OneDrive app of the receipts. They get uploaded, stored, and then I can categorize them and OCR them and search them and so on. And a OneDrive app on the phone does that for me. Microsoft's got a nice article here that will tell you, again, some of the major benefits around its simplicity, around its security, around its ability to share files quickly and easily, how it works to be social, and again, worthwhile having a look at this article to give you some ideas of what the benefits are, and maybe send that on to customers or other people in your business who may have some doubts as to the benefits of using OneDrive, especially the app on the mobile device. Now, another really good blog post that I came across that talked about the end-user impacts of multi-factor authentication. So we all know that multi-factor authentication is going to basically cut down our chance of being phished by 99.9% by requiring a token or some second degree of authentication. Now, what's the impact for an end-user? How do they enroll? What does that look like? So there's a great little blog post here that again has a video on what it looks like for a end user, what happens with conditional access and so on. So if you're doing MFA or you're looking for all the options that are available, when it comes to MFA for your environment. Don't go past this article to give you a look and a feel and a better understanding of exactly what that experience is going to be like for your end users. Now, another interesting one that I came across is we know that conditional access now is included in Microsoft 365 Business, and again, it gives us this ability to determine the device, the user, the location, and the app that connects to our data. One of the things we can do here is we can set up conditional access for Microsoft Search in Bing. So one of the things Microsoft is doing is allowing you to connect Bing into your search experience for your Office 365, Microsoft 365, and enhance that so you can use Bing to, for example, search your Teams, search your Yammer, and so on, as well as get your search across the internet information. But a big advantage, I think, of this integration is the ability to control it as an administrator. And one of those controls now is the ability to use conditional access. And conditional access is going to be able to control some of that searchability for the users who may be using that. So if you haven't looked at setting up the search capability in Bing that is linked to Microsoft 365, Office 365, I certainly recommend you have a look at the articles that are available online to allow you to do that. And again, look at the advantages of a totally integrated system. Now, one of the things on the Azure side that we have got now that has gone recently GA is the Azure Files Active Directory authentication with Azure AD Domain Services. So the idea here is that our Azure Files, that's basically our cloud-based repository for files, SMB format that we can connect to over the web, managing the permissions, managing the securities around that is now available using Azure AD Domain Services. So we can join that functionality of Azure AD Domain Services. So Azure AD Domain Services is basically a file server as a service. So you don't have to worry about running up the hardware or the infrastructure or the IaaS side of it. You basically pay for a service, platform as a service, and then now we can link that to our platform as a service files. And again, it makes it nice and easy. So we're getting into this sort of area of, well, why do you actually need a physical file server? Why do you need to spin up disk space, do partitioning, formatting drives, all that sort of stuff? Basically use the PaaS services, being domain services for identity, and again, things like, domain services for permissions and Azure AD for identity, and then again linking it into Azure Files, so I've got all the permissions. We're making basically a infrastructure file server now using PaaS services and basically only paying for what we use. So again, if you haven't started looking at that, that's going to give you that flexibility, give you the ability to potentially move away from infrastructure. Now remember that the way that infrastructure is built is typically going to be for time. If you want to have a file server available, you need to have it available 24/7, and that means you're going to be billed for the time that that file server is up and running, for example, in Azure. If you use the file service, you're basically only typically paying for access and storage, and that generally makes it especially a lot cheaper. Gives you the flexibility to, for example, one of the ways that I use Azure Files is to upload ISOs, utilities, those sort of things into it so I can access it anywhere on any machine as required. If we do this across a number of users, how do we do the permissions? How do we link that into Azure AD? That has been in preview for a while and now is generally available, and put the link in the show notes so you can go in and have a look for yourself basically around that. Now, one of the things that we see with data these days is how do we get value out of it? So one of the services that something like Azure can provide is machine learning. Now, machine learning basically is a model-based environment where what we would do is we would give it information, data to examine, and then we can train it on a model and get some results when we throw additional data through it. So there's an article here that, again, starts giving us some idea about how machine learning will work with unstructured data. Now, again, the tie here in is for Microsoft Defender ATP. So again, we can use this in a security context. Maybe not necessarily relevant directly and something you can action immediately or tomorrow, but it shows you the depth of research that Microsoft's investing in things like Defender ATP to, again, trawl through data, look for patterns, look for, again, insights and the intelligence that can be made from the data that is just sitting out there. So again, an article I'd recommend you have a look at, have a think about, give you an idea of the direction that these sort of technologies basically are taking. Now, we all know that technology is great, but there is also a cost to it. So implementing Azure, implementing Microsoft 365. Now, the good news is that Microsoft has just announced that Azure Archive Storage will have a lower price. Again, this is across a number of regions, not all regions just yet, but a majority of regions. I'll put the link in the article so you can go and check that, see whether your region is part of it. But they're talking about in this article of up to 50% discount in some regions. So Azure Archive Storage is the cheapest, but also the greatest latency, which means it takes a longer time to copy stuff up there. So again, think of it like Glacial is the equivalent, I believe, in AWS. And it's really sort of aimed at replacing the traditional tape drive. So you copy archive data that you may want to keep just in case into really cheap long-term storage. And if you need it, you can always pull it back. But the penalty, the price, the trade-off is going to be the speed of access. So it's going to be slower, but again, a further 50% reduction in price for that is going to be quite significant. Again, make it even more attractive for this long-term archival storage. Now, the last item that I've got here to bring to your attention basically is that the Chromium version of Edge, right? So that basically is the rewritten, or I suppose the redeveloped version of Edge based on the Chromium base, the Chromium browser, is now available as a general beta. So it was available in the dev channel and a canary channel. So the dev channel, again, was updating fairly regularly, I think weekly. The canary channel was updating daily. The beta channel, which is again open to anyone, is going to have major updates every 6 weeks, so again a little bit slower. So go in there, have a look at the link. You can go in now and select the beta channel, which is again separate from the dev and the canary channel. A little bit slower on the improvements and upgrades, a bit more stability, but it indicates again the progress that this browser is making. The uptake that it has been very positive. I've been using it for a number of months now. I've used it on Windows 10 and also Mac devices. I think it's fantastic. Works really well. The other thing is that the Chromium version of Edge also has an enterprise version, so something that will work with your Windows, your Office 365, Microsoft 365 login as well. So it is looking as a very good solution to pull all these identities, pull all this together in a Microsoft sphere, so we can have a Microsoft browser linked to an identity, linked to something like Office 365 online services, linked to our desktop apps, with Windows 10 logging with that identity. We get all the benefits, we get all the signals, the intelligence, and the protection around that by using that identity, which is secured largely there by Azure AD. So again, if you haven't had a look, I'd certainly recommend you go out and have a look at the Chromium version of Edge. And if you want something that's a little bit slower on the updates, you don't want to live quiet on the bleeding edge, then again, go and look at the new beta channel that is available, download that, and it will then bring you up to date and make sure that you have access to the latest version as it comes out there. So that's basically all the news that I want to get across quickly. Again, I want to thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Really appreciate it. We hope you enjoy this interview. I'm talking to Amy Babinchek, a Microsoft 365 MVP, and she's going to talk some interesting concepts here and her approaches and some information about some upcoming presentations that she's doing on her way out to Australia. But there's some actionable benefits there, I think, that everybody can take away. So again, we hope that you do enjoy this podcast from her. Again, we've got more coming, and remember that again, if you want to contact us, you can do so N2K podcast on Twitter and Facebook, feedback@needtoknow.cloud, and again I am at Director CIA on the Twitter, and Brenton is at Contact Brenton also on the Twitter. So with that, thank you very much for your attention. Thanks for listening to this episode, and let's get into the interview. I'm joined by Amy Babinchek. She is the owner of Harbor Computer Services, also the principal at Third Tier ICT Support, and a Microsoft MVP. Welcome along to the podcast, Amy.
Thank you.
So, as always, we'll get Amy to give us a bit of a brief background on herself and obviously the multitudes of businesses that she's involved with here. So if you could do that for us, Amy, that'd be great.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, I own a company called Harbor Computer Services. It's an MSP-style business in Michigan in the U.S. I've been in business for about 19 and a half years, so a good long time. And you mentioned I was an MVP. I started my MVP life in ISIS Server as part of Small Business Server. So I've been in that Small Business Server market space for a long time. And that is, in fact, my area of focus of my MSP are small businesses. So 100 users and fewer, all the way down to the onesie twosies. We serve that whole range. And then I do also own Third Tier, and we do IT support for IT pros. So when you run into a problem and you're stuck on it, instead of opening a case up with Microsoft, or mostly we do Microsoft, a few other vendors, you can go ahead and open up a ticket with us, and we will help you get unstuck and moving forward, or help you work on a project or whatever it is that you need some assistance with. And those are the principal things I do. I also do a bunch of tech writing and a myriad of things. I keep busy.
Well, I'm sure that we'll make sure that all that sort of information is in the show notes for people to go and have a look at. Like I said, there is a lot of information that you produce regularly. And again, the good thing is I think that you focus on the business side as much as the technical side, which is what's needed today in our changing environment. But I suppose the good news for people who haven't met you, they will have the opportunity to do that here in Australia in October. When you come down for a couple of events, and during those events, you'll be speaking on a number of topics. So what we thought we'd do is give people a brief outline, a bit of a taste of what some of these topics will be. And you can obviously, we'll let you know how you can attend those events and where Amy will be so that you can go and get these in far more detail. So I think to kick it off, why don't we talk about the topic around consulting firms that are going to be the survivors going forward. We've come from an environment where typically the techies, the one who was working in a business, then went out on their own, created their own business, then scaled up to become an MSP, but still largely doing tech. What's this concept of consulting firms are going to be the survivors?
Well, you know, you just described how I started my own MSP, right? I started off as a one-person shop, and I'm a very technical person, but I always did have this vision and kind of mission that the only reason that IT exists in the first place is to make businesses great. And so I sort of always have that in my vision when I'm being a tech, that, you know, I want to make sure this business is great. I want to help that business owner drive their business forward through the use of technology. And so I think there's a lot of people that started off like me as a tech, but they maybe didn't understand how to transition that into working with the business to make the business better, to really get into the consulting side, because you get so many phone calls coming in a day, and you maybe get stuck on that help desk answering calls. You know, you feel like you're doing a good job because you're knocking off those issues as they occur, and you're preventing the really bad stuff from happening. And but that's not the whole job, and that's going to be even less and less of the job as things go forward. And so you know, from the on-premises days when we had that small business server in place, you know, updating that server and patching those workstations and chasing viruses, you know, that was a big part of the job. But that part of the job is diminishing rapidly, if not gone, in a lot of businesses today. And so where does that leave us as tech people? That leaves us needing to be consultants, right? Everybody needs to shift their business around and think about how they get in deeper with that client to help drive their business forward. And part of that, you know, as an MSP, you've got a set of tools that you work with. I have completely changed the set of tools that we work with, you know, to include things like, you know, monitoring and reporting inside of the cloud applications to setting up a lot of security and providing more of those kinds of reports and information to clients. I hired my first trainer ever in 19 years. So we've got a full-time trainer on staff because it's not enough to know how to turn on a computer and type these days. The users in the company need to know how to work in a modern way. And that requires a completely different mindset because users are now much more responsible for maintaining the integrity of the business data than the administrator is. And so they need to understand how to manage corporate data. You know, just because the millennials coming in are 22 with 21 years of computer experience doesn't mean that they know how to manage business data. That's something that we have to teach them. And so it's really a complete shift around of how general techie business like we all used to be, does things and thinks about the networks that they're supporting.
So with this change that is happening, you know, in the marketplace, it's obviously driven by the cloud enablement, meaning that a lot of the back-end services that technical people would have taken care of on servers, Exchange service patching, is done by a vendor like Microsoft. And now there is more front-facing enablement. Is this something that there is going to be the same sort of revenue, do you think? Is the same opportunity there, or is it a case of there's only going to be so much and a select few will get it? Do you think it's going to allow the transition of people who are traditionally all technology to move into business and make the same sort of money or better?
I think there's a lot more money to be made. So, but if you are a tech and what you enjoy doing is patching servers and reading through event logs, then there's not a whole lot of future for you, unfortunately. But if what you really like to do is to provide secure configurations to help businesses use new tools to help users do things in the most productive way that they can do them, to get businesses to think about what the cloud means for them. Remember, on the business side, it's a whole new world for them too. Right? How things were when they were in their office meant they had certain limitations. The cloud takes those limitations away, but how does the business best use those? How do we have to configure things, change the way we do things from a technology point of view so that they can really take advantage of all the new concepts, new features, new productivity that the cloud offers? And there is a lot more money to be made in that than there ever was in updating servers and patching machines.
So would you say that maybe the biggest challenge for the technical types moving forward is not necessarily the shift from screwdrivers and patches and updates and event logs, as you mentioned? It's more around actually dealing with real people and real business problems. So part of it is, A, you're going to have to spend a lot more time interfacing with people, understanding, listening to their needs. You won't be dealing as much with the technology side of it. But also it's going to be a case of, well, hang on, what works for your business and how do I make the tool that I know well work with this business and slightly different for another business? So in essence, does this mean that, you know, technical people now will have to deal with the real human world?
Well, yeah, they have to deal with the real human world, but In my mind, you always should have been dealing with the real human world. I'll repeat myself. Tech does not exist for any reason other than to make the business great. So if you weren't thinking of the business when you were applying those patches, then you weren't in the right mindset to start with, right? The reason you were applying those patches was to do something for the business, to make that server the most stable box it could be so that they could make the most money possible. You're still doing that in the cloud. You're giving them the best experience with the best understanding how to make their business more profitable. You're just doing it from a slightly different perspective. There's still plenty of hands-on typing on your keyboard and configuring things, you know, in the cloud. Lots of that to do. But you got to keep in mind that you're doing it for a reason. You're doing it because the business needs you to help them work in the cloud the best way they can possibly do it.
And I think that part of that is that, yes, the technical side, like you talk about, especially around security and auditing and that sort of thing, is still there and will need to be done with tools typically like PowerShell. So there's lots of keyboard typing potentially for people. But I think the way I like to look at it is that perhaps now one of the biggest shifts has to be from a reactive approach to a proactive approach, where you need to say, okay, I've now seen this product, this service that's available. How can I apply that or help customers get the most out of this new service, which they've probably never seen, never understand, don't appreciate? It's now my job to take my knowledge of the product and help be proactive and show them the differences that this can make to their business, as you said. I mean, is that a fair statement that we have to move to this proactive, get out in front type approach now?
Yep, absolutely. So you said that perfectly. So when MSPs think about proactive, right, they've swallowed the message from the ConnectWise and Autotests of the world that proactive means patching. And, sort of proactive. You're going to do that before that machine fails. But that's not really what proactive truly means from the business perspective. Your customer is never going to ask you to implement conditional access. Your customer is never going to ask you to implement encrypted emails because they don't know these things exist. They don't know what they're for. It's your job as the consultant to tell them what the new features are. Here's what we're going to go ahead and implement. That's how I word it with my clients. It's not really an if. It's a here's what we're going to do. Because I know your business, the way you guys work, there's certain security things that we need to do. Introducing new features, showing everybody how to use those new features. I just had that discussion with my own staff here. We meet every Tuesday and we do training. We're applying a rule. I found out this rule was applied unevenly throughout our client base, and that made me unhappy. So they got a bit of an earful, and I said, get out there and do it. And what it is a rule to enable a confidential email by keyword. Now, Microsoft has some built-in policy that you can also do that. But what we're doing is providing them an easy way when they're typing an email to just type in one additional word and have that email not be able to leave the corporation. So that stems from before Microsoft came out with their rule. This our rule stemmed from a client that the manager was talking via email to an employee about a customer, and then asked that employee about a question that they didn't know. So they forwarded the whole thread to the client. Well, the client should have never seen that conversation. And so this is a way to protect from that. But that's something the client does not know to ask for, but it's something we can do that they immediately see value in. As soon as you tell them, hey, here's what you can do, they're like, oh, we need that. That's a great idea. Yep, implement that right away. And then we have to go out and talk to the staff and let them know that feature is now there, because they're not going to discover it on their own. We have to show them how it works, what it's for. And that's really a change in the way that text works. Yes, you go in the background, you log in, you do the configuration and the settings and the security, and then you go back out on the front end and you help the business and those employees use that new thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. There is just so much here that the client is not aware of, so much new stuff that Microsoft, for example, in Office 365, Microsoft 365, is bringing to the space that, again, has value to the customer, but they're never going to know it. They're never going to ask for it. They're going to continue to do things the same old, again, unless it's shown to them, and the benefits and the reasons why. And generally, as you said, once you find a solution for one client, you'll find that applies, I think, in a lot of other places around the environment. So again, that's a lot of good advice there. And I think that's going to be a worthwhile topic for people to come along and enjoy. So let's move on to topic number two, which is, again, a bit of a dark art, a bit of a mystery, which I don't think it should be. We're talking about Azure AD. So one of the things I've noticed in my travels around talking to resellers is that a lot of them really don't have a grasp of Azure AD, where it fits in, what it does, how it's different from the thing that they're used to being on-prem domain controllers. I mean, what's your sort of take on this new world of Azure AD compared to where we have been?
Azure AD is the single thing that reignited my interest in technology. Right after so many years of being in this field, and doing the same old server work and that, and I felt like I was getting stagnant and I was losing a little interest in it and I was getting kind of bored. And then Microsoft started to take the cloud quite seriously, and I looked to see what they were doing. And when I looked at what they were doing, I just had an epiphany. I was like, Microsoft is inventing something completely new. And that was so exciting to me, because I think Microsoft's really the only company out there that did not look at what they used to do, all the stuff they used to make on premises. They did not look at that. They just said, we're building the cloud, we're building new services for the cloud. And they started from scratch and they built them up with the future in mind. And so Azure AD is not your on-premises AD at all. It bears really limited similarities. Yeah, it's got users and groups in it, and it, you know, holds passwords. And then after that, everything else is new and exciting. And so, you know, doing things like dynamic groups. Dynamic groups used to be an Exchange only function. Now we've got it over in Azure AD. So in dynamic groups, we can get rid of that problem that we always had where you look in a group and there's some SID in there and it's a user that was deleted some time ago, but you don't remember what groups they were in. So when you remove a user, they just get left behind in groups and things can get ugly. And so dynamic groups, instead we do by regular expression, say the members of this group are going to have this criteria in them. And if you match this criteria, then you're a member of the group. Well, as soon as I delete somebody, they no longer match their criteria and poof, they're out of the group. And so by enabling those kind of groups throughout what the company needs, I've now just have a way finally to keep my AD very, very clean, which I didn't have before. And then we've got really awesome stuff like conditional access. And conditional access is coming down into the business plans. So you don't have to have big, expensive enterprise plans in the cloud in order to get this feature. And conditional access lets you say things like, hey, if you're in Australia, you're allowed to log in, but I'm not going to allow anybody to log in to this domain unless they're in Australia. You know, and that completely then knocks out all those hackers from Korea and Russia and Ukraine and wherever. Wonderful, wonderful security tools that we just didn't have with the on-premises Active Directory. We've got a whole new world in Azure AD. It's really exciting. And I hope in my session to kind of get that forward to maybe ignite some other people's excitement in what's possible in the cloud and get your techie juices going again.
I think one of the big things that is really exciting is that traditionally our AD has been limited by the blue cord that plugs into a static workstation, which sits in the corner that somebody types away on. Now we have a situation where we have many, many devices of many, many flavors, many, many of which do not have Microsoft operating systems on, but need management, need control. Again, we typically use a tool like Intune to do that, but Intune's basis is still the rules around identity, which is Azure Active Directory. Conditional access plays a role. So I think, again, when you look at it, there is a change of mindset here, but on the other side, it's not a limiting change. It's actually, as we've talked about in the previous topic there around consultants, there is actually more opportunity now with all these devices that need to be and customers require to be managed. And I think that's where the real excitement for a lot of people should be. It's like we're moving to a device world. And when I do talk to resellers about Azure AD, I'm always very careful to mention devices rather than machines or computers. So
100% agree, and I think we'll see this growth in the desire and the need to manage this mobile fleet. And I think that's a really exciting part of the Azure AD. And again, what's your sort of take on how we're moving to this mobile world and where Azure AD fits into the picture?
Well, it's very interesting because I think people that have not looked too much at Azure AD would be quite surprised to find out just how many devices are actually touching their network. So the interesting thing is as soon as you access a service, a Microsoft service, that machine becomes visible in your Active Directory. So somebody accesses a OneNote, OneDrive, they sync OneDrive in, they set up an email account, they do whatever in the, you know, Teams, anything. That device now shows up in your Azure Active Directory, and you now have the ability to control and put some policies upon the business data that resides on that device. Whether the company owns that or not, the company owns the business data, and you can now manage that data, which has always been the important part. So you don't have to own the machine in order to protect that business. That's another really very exciting about the way that Microsoft has approached this. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
I think, again, it's there's a lot of opportunity. There's a bit of, obviously, knowledge, again, a bit of an understanding of the differences. I think that's where a lot of people make a major mistake, is they think, oh, Azure AD is exactly the same, or more or less, you know, 100% compatible, the same with what we've seen on-prem. And that certainly is not the case. And the example I use is take a domain controller, throw it up in the air, smash it into a million pieces like a block of Lego, and then you pick the pieces that you want. So Microsoft's moved to this component model where you plug in the pieces that you want, but the core of it with all its services is Azure AD. I mean, is that a fair assessment, would you say, for people who are trying to understand what, you know, what it is at a low level?
Well, maybe. I mean, it's just so different from on-premises AD. I mean, it really is a whole new thing. You know, you're just going to have to see it, I think. So, you know, I'll try to bring that excitement in, try to bring those ideas of what's new and different and better about Azure AD than your old on-premises AD. I mean, on-premises AD had a lot of features, and I don't think many people used them. But it's much easier to do so in the cloud, and I just find it a fantastic product. Hopefully, you know, I'm trying to think of another great example of things that we do there. You know, just the amount of logging that's possible. So in your on-premises AD, you had a security log, but it was really hard to read. And it didn't give you a whole lot of information, but man, the Azure AD logs are granular and easy to search and pull up information and find out who logged into what, when, where, from what device, and what did they do. And it's really fantastic. It's a ton of information we could never do on premise.
Okay. All right. So again, another great topic that people should come along to and get some real insight into Azure AD, and hopefully get excited, as you mentioned, about the opportunities there and how to really get your geek on now with this as the starting point in the cloud. So let us turn to our third and final topic for our podcast here. And one of the other big changes in thinking that people need to bring to the new environment is this understanding of storage. Where data lives, where file lives, is very different from the file server environment that many people are used to on-prem. You know, can you give us a bit of background thinking? What are your thoughts on these differences?
So thinking back to that small business server again, you know, by default, it created a folder called company. And underneath company is where you put all of the business's data. And that made sense, right? A whole bunch of folders. And then we applied our shares and our NTFS permission to those and secured them in that way. But compared to what we can do today, that looks like the sledgehammer approach. And today we've got much finer controls. And so instead of that one single folder kind of area where everything lives underneath it, data is now moving into the applications where you use them. And so one big giant structure doesn't make sense anymore. And in fact, the migration to the cloud will just simply fail if you just forklift up your data structure and dump it into the cloud and say, here's my OneDrive, this where I'm putting it all, and here's your folder structure. And yeah, your users will be all comfy and feel that warm fuzzy because they'll see that same old folder structure that they've been using for the last 20 years sitting there. But it's really inefficient for them to work that way today. We want to put the data in the places where they're going to access the data from, so that it's easy from the different, we need to also think about the different types of devices that they're going to be accessing which types of data from, and make sure that we're putting that data in the best location for those kinds of devices that are going to be accessing it. So it's a really great opportunity for consulting. Sit down. Every company wants to keep their data structure the way that it is. The first minute you sit down with them, that's what they want. You have to change their mind and explain to them that, hey, we want to put, you know, we're going to put some of your data into OneDrive. We're going to put some into SharePoint. We're going to put some into Teams. We're going to make sense of this data from a new cloud and much more mobile way of the world is today.
I think also, too, the other big change with all of that is the mobility, like you mentioned, but also is this desire to share so much more with parties outside the business. You know, we want to share this folder. We want to share this environment. We want to share this so we can have our external contractors come in. That's a very different world from, you know, back in the old file server days, where typically sharing was done by sending attachments. Now, basically, a company wants to portion off a part of their environment, say, right, you know, this external group can access this, and here's another part which this other external group can access as well. So I think that's also a very large change in the way that businesses are run today. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think that is. And one of the ways that you can get your clients to adopt the new methods of sharing data, instead of just always attaching it to email, is by telling them one simple thing. What happens when you're done sharing that data? So you're working on a project. You've sent this contractor that you're working with all a bunch of data that goes along with that project. And then the project comes to an end, and where's your data? It's in the hands of that contractor. But in today's file sharing methods, we can retain ownership of that data while still allowing our contractors access to it. And that is very powerful, and the businesses immediately see the value to that. And so that's how you generate their interest in wanting to change, right? Change is hard for people. But there are ways, if you show them the light and say, hey, whatever, you know, did you ever have an issue where you sent out an AutoCAD file, and then, you know, years later, you found out that company was using your CAD file for some other purpose, maybe against you, even in a competitive situation. I've seen that with our clients, and guaranteed they've all seen that. And, you know, if you tell them we can make sure that never happens again, they're on board. They're now ready for change. So that's what we're going to be talking about, is how do we get people ready for the change? Where do we need to think about? How do we get them thinking about change and where my data should be for what? And where are all these places where I can put the data, and where is it best to put different types of data? There's a lot to think about here.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, something that links us back to our original topic. We're talking about consulting here. We're talking about doing consulting up front rather than starting with the tech piece of where do we move this, or what's the best migration tool, or, again, how many kilobytes, terabytes of data do we need to move, and, again, how are we going to move that up? So I think that it's sort of coming back in all respects to a business conversation first, which probably makes a lot of traditional technical people a bit uncomfortable, but it certainly seems to be that when they need to look at this as a change in their approach. They still can be very technical and do what they need to do, but the initial conversation really has to start with business needs, by the sound of it.
Yeah, it's both. So if you want to continue to be successful going forward, you have to be able to manage both of those tasks. You know, if you're just the person who punches the keyboard and doesn't see the people, that's a very low income job. You're going to be at the bottom of the pile. But if you're the person who can do the technical side and go out and talk to the client and manage that data migration project from start to finish, now you're a very valuable employee.
And I also think, too, that one of the other benefits that a lot of people overlook now is the they've always made new sales or based on referrals. So good clients referring other clients to them, and then that's the way they've grown their business. Now, in this wonderful world of social networking interaction, that's really the opportunity that a lot of resellers should be leveraging, I think, rather than maybe AdWords or those sort of things, is to really come up with a system that when they do a good job, they can then take that framework, which is fairly common, to the next business or a similar business and apply those sort of things. Say, well, we know this company had this issue. Is this maybe also something that you should consider? Here is the solution. And guess what? You probably already got most of the tools. We just need to implement for you. And I think a lot of them will generally jump on that. So again, I think there's no downside to developing these and then using those as ways to talk to prospects. And I think the big advantage is if you do it right, you've got your own custom IP, which you can then apply that separates and differentiates you from everybody else in the market, where all the technical stuff is really going towards a commodity environment, isn't it?
Yeah. I tell you, we had a bit of a growth spurt this last year with 18 new clients. Now, you know, our client totals around 68 now. So, you know, so we're not a giant business. So a jump of 18 was huge. And they came in via events we held and also through the social media work that I do to let people know that we're out there. And the majority of those clients came to us looking for a new IT firm that had more depth in the cloud, because they had purchased 365 and they migrated to it, but they weren't really that happy with it. And they realized that the business was outrunning their IT firm. The business had migrated them over onto it and then stepped away and was like, we'll monitor it for you. But they want that deeper touch. They know they're missing something. And, you know, that netted a bunch of new clients for us this year. So that market is out there.
Excellent. All right. So what we'll do is we'll wrap it up here. Again, we talked about the presentations that you'll be doing when you come down to Australia land, Adelaide specifically in October 2019. Those topics are going to be around consulting firms will be the survivors, the I suppose the new and the cool stuff that's available in Azure AD, and also talking about the conversation with people about putting their data in the right place in tools like Office 365, Microsoft 365, getting them ready for that. Is there any other thing that you'd like to mention or summarize before we round off our conversation?
Well, the only thing I would say is I hope I'm able to convey the excitement and get people that are maybe sitting on the fence with the cloud or really haven't really dove in deep to maybe rub off of some of that excitement that I have about it. And I'm, you know, tell you exactly why I'm excited. And, I want to see the people that come be more successful in their businesses too. So that's the goal of coming down to Australia to talk with y'all.
Excellent. Well, there will be a huge amount of learnings from that. We thank Amy for obviously investing the time and taking the long plane ride down to those events. How can people keep up to date with what you're doing in your business, in Third Tier, everything else that you do? What's the best way that they can keep up to date? But if they want to reach out and ask you a few more questions or get a few more details, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
You can email me, amy@thirdtier.net, or you can join the Facebook. Like Third Tier's Facebook page, and then we also have a group under there called Ransomware and Security, where there's an awful lot of talk. It's a really good group. very respectful, lots of good people in there. Where we're talking about preventing ransomware, we talk about security issues, we try to keep each other up on the latest news and happenings in that area. And so between the third tier is really where I do a lot of my blogging for that's kind of outward facing to other IT professionals. So if you follow me in those areas, you'll get all the good stuff.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure that those links are in the show notes for this episode. Again, I'll take this opportunity to thank Amy for her time, sharing her knowledge and information. Look forward to catching up with her when she comes down to Australia in Adelaide. Like I said, in October, all the details will be in the show notes so people can, again, hopefully come along and share in some of the learnings that Amy will be providing. So once again, Amy, thank you very much for your time on our episode today.
Thank you for inviting me.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.